from FreeBSD. We've grabbed bits from NetBSD as well, but everything I'm talking about today is going to be probably equally applicable to any of the BSDs, so hopefully of interest to more than just the Juniper people in the audience. So the idea, in case nobody knows, we build Junos for, I've lost count of how many different architectures. We cross-build it. We're an embedded system, so we cross-build. We do it as fast as possible. The universal complaint from all of our developers over the last 10 years is that the build is too slow, and it is. But I, out of curiosity, I asked one of our guys who likes doing these sort of things to go time a make universe for FreeBSD, which he did, and then we compared that to running the Junos build on the same machine, and the Junos build turns out to be about 3 times as productive in terms of gigabytes per hour, and we think there's a lot more room for improvement. So hopefully that means that some of this should be of interest to others. I'm going to talk a bit about the history and the evolution of the build as it is, and then introduce building with MetaMode, which the metafile stuff that we're talking about there is taken directly from John Burrell's build project, which he originally did for FreeBSD, and I'm pretty sure he gave a talk here a couple of years ago. So here's a little teaser. This is just going to pick a random directory in FreeBSD current and type make minus J12 or something and let it go crazy and build everything that it needs in parallel, making object directories, and all just working. That took about 60 seconds. It's hard to make a build log look interesting, I'm sorry. Things to note, though, that object directories created automatically. There was no make depend done. We haven't done a make depend in the Junos build for over 10 years. Everything ran in parallel, but in the correct order, and all the leaf directories were visited directly. There's no tree walks involved. And you'll notice a few things there called makefile.depend, which is one of the artifacts of MetaMode. This is what one of those makefile.depends looks like. They're auto-generated. The dep underscore variable is just a hack that Dirdeps needs. This guy here is the thing that pretty much runs the whole build. It's only about 200 lines if you strip all the comments. It's not something you want to read on an empty stomach. But in the true tradition of the BSD build, it encapsulates all the scary magic into a very small place. So what we have in here, we've got a list of directories. Dirdeps refers to the things that need to be built before this directory can be built. And if you go and visit each of those, or go find in each of those directories the makefile.depend that happens to be there and learn what it needs to have built before it gets built and so on and so forth, you very quickly build a graph of the entire tree for the origin that you're starting from. And the other thing worth noting is we capture here any local dependencies that are needed to allow this particular directory to build in parallel in a clean tree. There are lots of makefiles, and I'll give a simple example later of makefiles that run beautifully in compat mode but blow up spectacularly as soon as you try and turn on jobs mode. So let's get into some history. The traditional BSD build looks vaguely like that. I've made it deliberately generic so that it's not offending anybody, I hope. The BSD tree is a great example of organization of a large code base, and the BSD build is actually a really good example of how to build such a code base. This structure, it works, and it works well. And in fact, when it was originally done, apparently the tree walks involved were an optimization to, or resulted in an optimization to reduce the footprint of make during the process. So it was all very good. All of the magic in the build is largely concentrated in share, merc, and the top level make files. And those top level make files, if you look at FreeBSD, NetBSD, Junos, and so on, they can be pretty big and pretty hard to fathom for your average engineer. That's one of the things we want to fix. I'm going to talk about the Junos build. I should clarify that we build two different operating systems. We build the one that goes on the data plane where all the cool ASICs are and all the heavy lifting of shuffling packets around the world happens. That's a, or until very recently, was a foreign object built with GMake and so on. I've spent 10 years trying not to look at it. None of the cool stuff I'm talking about used to apply to this. On the other hand, the control plane is basically BSD, FreeBSD with some other bits, and that's the bit that we're interested in today. So when I started at Juniper about 10 years ago, Junos was essentially a few packages that we built and put on top of a stock 2.x install, FreeBSD install. Those multiple packages each came out of different CVS modules, and apparently there was a bit of overlap between those modules, which made it very difficult for people to make changes that affected multiple packages and be able to test them sanely before they committed, which was obviously a problem. So my, starter project was go fix the build. And the requirements were, a single source tree that you could test the entire system. It needed to handle subset checkouts and all that sort of stuff. And the kicker was, and zero impact on the current build, which resulted in some contortions. But overall, it worked well. I call it an experimental build because we never actually got this to be the official production build before we shifted gears and went into the 4.x FreeBSD world and ELF and so on and so forth. The 5.0 build introduced a lot of features that we still use today. We were very concerned about people editing headers because they're making a change to something and then forgetting to do them, making includes to install it, and then going off and building their program, putting it on the router, spending the next 3 days working out why their changes don't work. So we made the decision to use headers from where they're edited, link libraries from where they're built, and let the make files take care of making that all just work. We also started packaging our software as ISO images. If you look at a Junos router, there's multiple ISO images sitting there, and that's basically the software. One of my colleagues introduced a simpler set of top-level makefiles. Is simpler compared to my 4.x build, which was, you know, super slick, really cool, but like very difficult to explain to anybody how it worked. So this was actually an improvement. Simpler is better. We also introduced AutoDep to avoid having to do make depends and stuff like that. And we visit the... So, yeah, even that, even in both these builds, we visited the leaf directories directly to avoid tree walks. Roll on a few years. One of the reasons for all the gaps between all the improvements is that, you know, maintaining the build was largely a part-time job. So it got attention when it needed to, but other priorities always took precedence. By this stage, the original top-level makefiles in the 5.0 build, it was all those tree dependencies were hand-coded, and it got increasingly difficult to explain to people, well, if you want to add a new directory to the build, basically just go to those makefiles, find every instance of something similar, and copy it. That's not a very good model. So what we did in this edition was automate that process. We basically have manifest files which define what go into those packages that go onto the router, and it's not a very difficult process to take those as your origin of what you want to build, get the list of directories from those manifests, go visit those directories, ask those directories what do you need, do that recursively, and build a graph of the entire tree. And we check that into CVS in a single directory, so it was part of the stuff that originally gets checked out and can then be used to drive subset checkouts, which also made it easy to, for instance, take the daily build that the official build guys do and use that as what we call a backing sandbox so that you can check out just the bits of the tree that you want to work on, but all the rest of the libraries and headers and so on are coming from that shadow tree, if you like. And we started signing packages because we were getting ready to do FIP certification and things like that. By 2008, we decided that having all that dependency information burned into the tree in a single directory was not such a hot idea. It ended up being a source of lots of conflicts when people trying to check in changes at the same time. A lot of these ideas worked really well when there was 100, maybe 200 people contributing to Junos. By the time it gets to 1,000 people, it sort of starts to break down. So we took those dependencies out of CVS and we generated them dynamically at the start of a build. So whenever you did update your tree, that would cause it to say, oh, next time you do a build, I need to go regenerate all this stuff. That also had the advantage that we could then generate all that stuff on a per machine basis because the number of architectures being supported had grown dramatically. And so the tree dependencies were quite varied. So where we're at today, we've finished our first stage of our migration to what I'm calling meta mode. That's basically taking that horrible GMake build that we've suffered with and replacing it with BMake running in meta mode. And that gives us, I say better debugging there, it's actually debugging. The GMake build was completely undebuggable. Much better parallelism and much more repeatable results. I was talking to one of our VPs for one of the large BUs recently who just mentioned that she'd stopped seeing complaints from her engineers about problems with the building this stuff, so that we took that as a good sign. The rest of the build can also run in meta mode and actually has done for, a couple of years now. But getting that GMake build gone and cut over and everybody sort of like signing off on in blood that, yes, we're going to move forward with this was the critical step that we've been waiting for. There's a few major make files that we need to rework to avoid circular dependencies, and I'll get into some of that later. But it'll take us probably till the end of this year to finish the migration, but we expect to get some good improvements out of it. So now I'm going to talk about some of the desirable things that we've done that have proved the test of time, and that we're going to continue forward with. Keeping the sources and objects separate is probably a no-brainer. I know most of you probably already do that. Automated object creation is very helpful. It saves you from the annoyance of you forgot that one time to do make OBJ and you kicked off a build and now you've got it. Yes, question?
Well, related to object creation.
Yep.
How does that work in an environment where you may not have permission to create
objects,
or do you fall back?
No, we don't have that environment.
Okay.
You provide an environment where you can do that. You don't create the other thing I was going to say is you don't create the object directories within the source tree. So if you use like make obj dir prefix, that's the easiest way to point the object tree anywhere that you have write permission to. And so it's largely not a problem. So automated directory object dir creation is a godsend. Automated dependency collection is also great. As I mentioned, we haven't done make depend for many years. Directory-based dependencies are also excellent. It avoids all those tree walks. Building in parallel, obvious. And we make a lot of use of captive tool chains. We have a tools team who build compilers and all that sort of stuff. And basically, once they've validated that a compiler is going to be used and is good, it goes into a repository and never gets touched again. And that means all of our engineers don't waste time building those things. A couple of quick definitions just for anybody in the room who's never seen BSD. Caradir is the directory where make started. Objdir is the directory where it is when it starts doing stuff. Machine is the specific CPU that we're doing stuff for, and machine arch is typically a generalization of that. In some cases, like i386, they're the same, but for others, you have machine arches, MIPS for any of XLR, Octeon, so on and so forth. This is, what's the word? Yes, Make has a predilection for finding an objdir, and this sometimes bites people who are unfamiliar with it. If you import third-party source code that happens to have a directory called obj, and your build isn't working, interesting, it's typically because Make decided that, I found an objdir directory, I'm going to go in there and start doing stuff. This little loop of bourne shell is the easiest way to describe how he finds his objdir. The significant thing is if he falls out of this loop with objdir and caradir being the same, if he couldn't find anything, which is an important thing to keep in mind. Separating them, as I said, is really important. Some people like to have their sources and objects in the same directory. At one stage, we supported people doing that and using all sorts of different versions of objdirs and so on, and it just got insanely expensive trying to support that environment. So we eventually just drew a line in the sand saying, no, you will have objdirs, and they will be created this way, and we didn't get a single complaint from anybody. So it's a good idea. Putting them in the source tree itself, though, really doesn't help very much at all, so we don't do that. Make objdir prefix, as I mentioned, is the easiest way to point your object tree off to somewhere else, but the resulting objdirs are hideous, it gets even worse when you're doing AMD and stuff like that. We use bmake, NetBSD's make, and we have done for basically ever, which allows you to do some modifiers on the make obj variable, which makes it very easy to produce quite neat objdirs which provide a neat parallel tree to the source tree. You can still do make obj link to get a handy reference to your objdir while you're doing fiddling in a directory, but the build itself will ignore that because make obj dir is set. Go forward. Yes. Having a well-defined source top and variables that serve these roles is very useful. It allows you to simply assert this is where this thing is rather than try and guess. I found several instances of this sort of logic within makefiles in FreeBSD and other places, and invariably they get the answer wrong. The outcome is influenced by whether you've done make obj yet, whether you're, and it only works in the case that you either don't have objdirs in this particular example, or you're doing obj in the source directories. So automated objdir creation is, as I mentioned, an excellent thing. This is the little snippet that we use in a file called, what is it, auto-obj.merc. Basically, at the end, if you do this, this causes make to reset its idea of what objdir is. So it allows the make files to decide, this is where I want my objdir, does it exist? No, so I can go and run a little script to build it and then jitter to it, and everything just works. It's very useful. Dependency collection. In the 5.0 build, we introduced this autodep.merc. It just leverages GCC's minus M macros. You collect foo.d files as you go, and at the end of the build, you collect them into .depend. And a very useful feature is when bmake reads .depend, it knows that it's reading .depend, and it flags all of the dependencies as optional. So when a header is moved or removed and so on, it deals with that in a graceful manner by effectively causing the target to be out of date rather than failing the build. So that's a fairly important aspect when trying to do auto-dependency collection. Otherwise, you end up having to do RM stuff and do it all over again, which doesn't help much. Directory-based dependencies. Let's see. We've been doing this the hard way, the easy way, and we're going to do it even better in the future with MetaMode. Basically, what we do is we leverage the DP add info that you put in your make files. You say, when you say, I depend on libc, well, that means libc needs to be built before you. It's very easy to use a little make file like DP add to take all that information about what those libraries are and where you're going to get them from. It sets a bunch of variables, so I'm going to skip that because we'll run out of time otherwise. And you run a little program, you run the dpadd target in each directory, and it spits out, here's all the stuff you need to build for this particular directory. And if you recurse through the tree doing this, you gather the set of these sort of dependencies that say, if you want to build bin, login, here's all the stuff that you need to have built first. And in this way, the top level gathers a graph of the entire tree's dependencies, and then you can just basically ask it to go build any particular thing, and it knows what has to be done first. The tree walk to do this is expensive. We don't like that, but we arrange to avoid it whenever possible. Basically, when you update your tree, it'll be triggered as being necessary, and otherwise it's skipped. Building in parallel is obviously wonderful. There's no such thing as going too fast, but it's pointless going fast if the results are wrong. This is a fairly typical example of a makefile that works beautifully in compat mode. But assuming file 1 includes parser.h, it blows up pretty quickly as soon as you turn on jobs. And the reason, in case anyone doesn't know, in compat mode, you do depth first and in-order evaluation of targets, and as soon as you turn on jobs mode, it's breadth first and everything runs together. And so this makefile will typically explode on file 1.0 before it's finished generating parser.h. And unfortunately, the first approach most people take to fixing this introduces different problems. Here we've got parser.c and parser.h, depending on parser.y. That usually ends up in the yak being run twice, typically at the same time, with very varying but usually bad results. Take 2 is often just as bad. It avoids the multiple running of yak, but then typically introduces circular dependencies, because now when we do our auto dependency collection, we'll learn that parser.c includes parser.h, and we've got a dependency here saying that parser.h depends on parser.c. So the right way to do it is that. For all these sort of reasons, we've to date defaulted to not run leaf makefiles in jobs mode, just because it's easier, and until fairly recently, the machines weren't fast enough that we couldn't get enough parallelism out of just the top-level build. With MetaMode, though, as I mentioned, we can capture enough local dependencies to be able to safely run the entire tree in parallel, so we'll be flipping that when we finish the conversion. Yes?
Isn't that still a glitch anyway? Wouldn't the correct approach be having the ability to tell make that a particular command has 2 results, targets?
Yeah, but it's...
It's a lot more harder to implement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've put a lot of features into NetBSD's make over the last decade or so, and it's fairly safe to say that any change you make to make has the capability of breaking somebody somewhere. A little bit of caution is warranted. Captive toolchains, I'm not going to say very much about that, other than that we do it. We find it very important. I notice NetBSD's build has fairly reasonable support for it as well. And it's especially important when you're cross-building. If you support building to very low power, Octeon and other things, it helps a lot. So it hasn't all been rosy. As I mentioned, our engineers think the build is massively slow, and it is, and it builds way too much stuff. I didn't mention before that comparison of build universe versus the Junos build. FreeBSD's build universe produced just under 14 gigs of stuff in, I forget now, 89 minutes, whatever that is in hours. The Junos build took 260 minutes to produce over 115 gig of stuff, and 115 gig is ridiculous, but that's nothing I can fix. So anyway, these are some of the things that we've learned. Some things scale better than others. Some hacks live too long, and you really need to revisit from time to time. So I mentioned before that we took the decision to avoid having to install headers from where they get edited to where they're going to get included. This works really well. I mean, this has worked very well. It's avoided numerous problems. It doesn't necessarily scale fantastically in that doing it this way makes it much more difficult to spot when you've got two people developing two libraries and they both come up with a foo.h as part of their public API. And that works wonderfully as long as nobody ever tries to use those two libraries in the same application. This hasn't been a particular problem for us, but it's a problem that we recognize is potentially there. One of the advantages of moving to meta mode is that we can eliminate the original problem. So it's always good to go back and say, what problem were you fixing and can you fix it a different way? And with traditional builds and so on, it's very difficult to fix this problem. But with meta mode, we can know that the header in the installed directory is out of date with respect to the source tree and therefore make sure that when the guy edits his header, it does end up back in the stage tree and therefore we have the option at least to revisit this choice. It'll probably be quite a while before we cut over if we do, but at least we have the option now. Too much complexity. I mentioned that the BSD build does a great job of isolating complexity in share, merc, and typically the top-level make files. And over the last several years, our build has at least tripled in size since those nice, neat make files are introduced in 7.0. We'll put in there. It's getting to the point where you don't really want mortals touching it, which doesn't scale at all. And so this is one of the key motivations for ditching all this stuff and moving to the meta mode build. All the leaf make files are largely unperturbed by any of this stuff. They're as simple as they ever were, as long as people don't cut and paste from the wrong stuff. Here's an example of a bit of magic that we use in our top-level build to allow you to shift the machine that you're currently building for. This allows you, your production build to say, I need to build lots of stuff for i386 and I need to build lots of stuff for MIPS, and this just makes it work. And it's very clever, but it's very easy to misuse. There'll be a test later for who can spot the bug here. But the problem is one of the reasons for all that complexity is that you're not always building just build universe or just build kernel. Your top-level make files typically accrete zillions of targets that people want to build. Marcel wants to build just the packages for his particular platform and other people want to build just the packages for their particular platform. But when you do your production build where you're supposed to produce the packages for everybody's platform and you want that to run optimally, the dependencies that get sucked in are supersets. And so, for example, in this case here, as soon as you try and run that everything target, it depends on stuff that was working fine as individual targets, but when you put it all together, this guy and another results in building for machine XYZ twice at the same time. And that typically ends in tears. Dirdeps makes it trivial to intersperse directory and machine dependencies, which pretty much eliminates this sort of problem. So I don't know if this is a surprise to everybody, but not all C programmers are build geeks. I'm sorry. These are the basic rules that I give people for writing leaf makefiles, at least. And the bottom line is, don't go find the most complex makefile that you can find and use that as the basis for your makefile for cat. But the problem is nobody reads to number three. So makefiles, like C code, accrete dependencies that are typically unnecessary. And the bottom line is, the less humans have to maintain, the better. One of the other problems that we have or that people complain about is when they check out a clean tree, because we do so much code generation and things like that, and some of these generators use code that needs to be built for the host as well as the target, in a clean tree, there's almost always some form of top-level build that you need to do before you can then go down into the bowels of whatever daemon you're wanting to frob and get into your edit compile test cycle. This is another thing that we can eliminate with dirdeps. Insufficient parallelism is another thing. As soon as you have all these phases like make depend, make includes, make libs, and so on, you've got phases in your build which become big sequencing points. We actually make a lot of use of submakes at our top level to allow for doing things like, okay, let's build the host tools, and we don't want anything to start until we've finished doing that, and now we can go start doing stuff in parallel, and then we need to, you know. It gets very complex very quickly, and while 8 years ago it was sufficient to be able to just run the top-level make files in parallel and thus consume the fastest build service we could build at the time, these days we find that, you know, you try and do a minus J20-something build today, and you're lucky if the 15-minute load average gets to 15. We'd like to be able to go a lot faster than that. So what the hell is MetaMode? It's very simple, really. We have these things called, strangely enough, metafiles, which capture some useful information about each target that you build. The expanded command line, which is very useful. The command output is also very useful, and I'll give an example of why that's useful. And all the interesting system calls that happened. And by interesting, I mean all the files that were read or executed and stuff like that. As I said at the outset, the metafiles are originally found in John Burrell's build project for FreeBSD. We use them exactly today the same. John's build used dtrace to capture this info, and you still can use dtrace to capture this info, although in the case of exec system call, if you're using like exec VP and you pass it just RM, then arg0, as reported by dtrace, is just going to be RM, which is not very useful when you really want to see the full path to it. That and the fact that it required root privilege to run causes us to ask John to write a little kernel module to do the job instead. The other problem was because the build thing controlled everything that the build did and therefore needed completely new make files for all sorts of things, it made the proposition, the transition much more difficult than we wanted. So with BMake, what we do is we take, you know, just the guts of how to deal with metafiles, add them to BMake, and let the rest of the stuff be under the control of the make files. And this makes it trivial for us to do the transition. We had the bulk of our tree able to run in meta mode within like a week, that was very good news. Converting the data plane, as I mentioned, was the first priority, though. And it's interesting, the guy who did the prototyping of that conversion, the way he sold this to all the PFE, we call it the data plane, the PFE, the way he sold this idea to all the people who had worked on this thing for years was he would just go into a little room like this, and while he's sitting there, he'd kick off a build of that thing, and then he'd just be sitting and talking to them. And then after a few minutes, he'd notice that nobody was looking at him. They're all staring at the screen that he was projecting because they're all going, it's up to there already? Oh, okay. So it worked pretty well. The rationale is very simple. It helps us automate the capturing of dependencies. It helps us optimize the build, and it helps us improve the reliability of the build. And by optimizing, I mean doing as little as possible, doing it in parallel, but doing it correctly. And MetaMode makes all of these easier. Avoiding make-depend is probably fairly obvious. We've avoided it for a long time. One of the advantages that we get with MetaMode is FileMon lets us capture dependencies from everything, not just targets built by GCC. And we build stuff for Java and all sorts of things, and we can now capture dependencies for a much greater percentage of the tree than we used to be able to. Being able to look at those expanded command lines that get captured in the metafile allows you to avoid tricks like this, where if any of the make files got changed, I better regenerate this header. And by the way, all my objects depended on that header, so I'm typically doing a lot of recompilation of stuff which may not have been actually necessary. I've mentioned a number of times, tree walks don't always cut it. They work, don't get me wrong, but it can be very difficult to express all of the dependencies of the tree without having multiple phases of, okay, let's do the phase one walk of the tree now and do the phase two and so on. It doesn't matter what they're called. You end up doing multiple tree walks to achieve what you need. The fact that in meta mode, the zeroth instance of make goes and effectively reads the dependencies of the entire tree, gathers it all in his head, and then just tells the tree, look, just go for it, guys. And everything then happens at basically the next level down, and it's infinitely faster. So all you do to build in meta mode is you stick the word meta in a variable called make mode. It's a variable, and it's a variable so that certain make files which have particular needs can control the mode for themselves. For instance, there are lots of make files that you'll find that are actually expected to generate some stuff to standard output and some stuff to standard error, and that stuff doesn't work well when you go into jobs mode where everything is captured in via the one pipeline. So we want to be able to make sure that we can still force things to run in compat mode on occasion. The other thing is this little trick we do in sys.merc, because we want to make sure that the first thing that the all target depends on is dir depths, and that's the hook for making all the dir depth stuff happen. But we only care about it if we're the zeroth instance of make. Once we've any of the submakes, all of this becomes irrelevant because the work's been done. When we write a meta files, typically it's named for the target that you're building with a .meta extension. We skip these typically for all the phony targets and other things which make sense, unless you've explicitly said, no, I know you would normally not do a meta file for this, but I really want you to do one, so I stick the .meta tag on it to make sure I get one. And similarly, I can stick a .nometa if I really don't want one, even though make might otherwise think it was a brilliant idea. We normally skip them if we're not using separate objdir and caradir, which in our world doesn't normally happen. But we provide a knob so that you can turn it on. That's actually useful. The only example I can think of where that's useful is doing kernel builds, where you actually cd into the generated directory where you're going to do the kernel build, and you launch make there, and it would normally think, oh my gosh, we're in the current directory, so let's not do any meta files. Well, we actually want them. If the target you're building is not something in the current objdir, then the meta file name is basically the absolute path of that thing with all the slashes replaced with underscores, just so that it ends up in the right place. The content I mentioned includes the expanded command lines, the command output, and then the syscall info. And make tracks these things with two variables, one that basically tracks every meta file that we read or create. So this is the total set of meta files that are interesting to that particular directory. And then this one tracks the ones that we actually created or updated. And that's used later to trigger whether or not we need to go and reassess whether or not we've got any dependencies to evaluate. This is just a quick blurb on what the FileMon output looks like, but I've got an example there later which is probably more useful. So when we read them, we don't read the meta file if make has already decided that the target is out of date. We've got a target, we think it's already up to date, but we've got a meta file, so we go start reading the meta file. And as soon as in that process we decide that the thing is out of date, we stop wasting time. So the first thing he does is compare the expanded commands from last time it ran with this time. And if they're different, guess what? We're out of date. That means that if you change the value of your C compiler, everything will get recompiled, which is usually a good thing. Eventually, he gets down to comparing the M times of all the files that were read or executed during the previous run of this particular target. And if any of them are newer than the target, the target's out of date. The latest change is you can set this bailiwick variable, which basically defines a number of prefixes which match the directories which you consider under the control of make. And what he can do then is, if he finds a generated file that fits within that bailiwick, which isn't in the current objdir and is missing, then the target's out of date. For example, you did a, let's do a make install into a particular directory, and then your friend goes and rm-rfs that directory. You don't want your tree to think that it's done that because it hasn't now. And so it'll automatically redo that because it's necessary. Performance is actually not bad. You end up doing a lot of stack calls compared to what make would normally do, a lot more stack calls. It's the worst case scenario is when you've got nothing to do. So if you look at libc, produces like 3,000 objects. The extra n thousand stack calls that go on to work out whether you've got nothing to do adds about a second, compared, you know, 6 seconds versus 5 seconds for make to work out that he had nothing to do. So it is measurable, but it's generally speaking in the noise. And otherwise, we measure the impact about the same as using AutoDep. In fact, maybe marginally quicker. The meta to deps script, which is the thing that actually goes and reads meta files to extract what we care about from it, is currently a shell script. That hasn't proven to be a huge problem, but I imagine at some point we'll rewrite it in something more efficient just to speed things up. But while we're still cutting our teeth, as it were, the shell script's quicker to adapt. Back in 2001, I instantiated a system I called Sisyphus. His joy in life was to check out the Junos tree as a result of every commit, go and build it, and if it didn't work, analyze the build break, work out who broke it, and file a PR against them. This has proved very useful. To cut a long story short, the .meta files we get from MetaMode will make his job a lot easier because those meta files contain everything that he needs to be able to do that analysis effectively. Here's an example of a meta file. I deliberately made a compile explode so that we can get the full flavor. The first bit is the expanded command lines, the target that we were making, and then the command output, and no surprise, no such .h doesn't exist. And then we have the stuff that we gather from FileMon, and the first little blurb is just some boilerplate as to which version of FileMon we're using, the version just defines the protocol. And then basically an entry for every system call that make cares about when we exec something, which process execed it, and the path name exec, and so on. The process IDs are actually useful because when you're reading this stuff, you need to track that process ID XYZ did a chdir, and then when it later does a reference via a relative path, you need to be able to map back, this process was reading this file, but it's actually in this directory. So make has to track all that stuff as he's reading this. So extracting the dependencies from this stuff is somewhat expensive, so we avoid it whenever we can, and that's where the make meta created comes into play. If it's empty, then we know we've got nothing to do. But the meta autodep thing takes care of all that. And I think we've got some examples here. So this little snippet from a meta file gives an example of files that we found in the object tree that were not in the current direct objdir, and therefore they represent things that need to be built before us. And this is how we accumulate what goes into dirdeps. Similarly, anything that we read from the source tree, which is not coming from the current directory, represents something that needs to be in the checked out tree in order for this directory to build. And you do this for the entire tree, and you very quickly gather a lot of information that you can reuse in lots of different ways. Being able to map the objdirs back to source dirs is, in the case where you're using things from where they were edited, as trivial as it was to produce the objdir from the current dir. You just do that same substitution in reverse. When you're staging files like headers and libraries into, you know, some kind of staging tree, it gets a little bit more complex, And what we do there is we deposit a little file next to each such header, which basically identifies the directory in the source tree where that came from. And thus, when meta2deps is reading the meta file and he comes across somebody read uni this header, the first thing he does is there a .dirdep next to it? Oh, good, I'm done, because that tells me all I need to know. It's worth pointing out that the majority of the makefiles just work. No need to touch anything. The changes to BSD, star.merc to use all this stuff are fairly minimal. We actually isolate a lot of the new stuff in new makefiles, all with a meta prefix typically, apart from dirdeps, okay. It allows us to basically be able to build the build the old way, the new way, in parallel, which we've been doing for over a year now, so that you can work out how well it's going. The makefile.depend is probably the most visible change. And because we're cross-building to multiple targets, we put the .machine extension on the end of those. That avoids any contention if you actually happen to have multiple machines trying to build the same directory at the same time and they're both going to try and update the same file. You then have to have all sorts of mutexes and stuff, and keeping separate files for each machine avoids all of those sort of overheads. I just said that. Good. One build product per directory is a slight exaggeration. The idea is that each directory should do the same thing every time. We only capture dependencies when you're running the default target. You don't want to, for instance, perturb your dependencies if somebody just does make Cscope or make, you know, something that's not actually related to building stuff. You want to ignore that from the terms of the point of view of did we change the dependencies. That's good. We separate machine stuff. This is an optimization. If you're going to generate some code, IDL, stuff like that, and then you're going to build it for 30 different architectures, it's worth generating the code once and then reusing it multiple times, and doing it as in a separate directory makes that easier. There you go. That's about as complex as autodep is in this case. The real trick is this. When make reads a make file, any dependency line, everything on the right-hand side gets fully evaluated as the line is read. I have an interview question to test people on this. The double dollar here, though, prevents this variable from being fully resolved because it doesn't have a value at this point because we still haven't started doing anything. But it gets recorded via there, and when make eventually comes to evaluate this target, if he works out that, oh, we actually did something and therefore we need to go do this stuff. It's actually very handy. Gen.dirdep.merc just basically does the mechanics of doing that stuff. I should point out. So anything that we've found in source top is a source dependency. And if anything we found in objtop is a directory dependency. And anything we found in objtop that wasn't matching our current machine is something that we had to build for a different machine than what we are. And so those get recorded as what we call qualified dependencies. I probably have an example later. Metastage just basically does, you can think of it as doing make install as you go through the build. That's pretty much it. Dirdep.merc is the thing that, as I mentioned, really does all the work. It's not the lightest read, but it's actually not very hard to follow if you squint. Pretty much, conceptually, it's very simple. You read the makefile.depend from the current directory where you started the build, and you get the initial set of dirdeps, and then for each of those, you build a dependency that, you know, the current directory depends on all of those guys, and then you go find all the makefile.depends for all those guys, and you repeat the process until you lose interest. And that's a fairly stripped-down example of how you would do it, ignoring all the complexities of building for different machine types and such. It's relatively, as I say, it's quite straightforward. Sometimes you don't want to build the entire tree or go check the entire tree every time. You might want to do that the first time in your clean tree, for example, but once you know you've done it, you know that the rest of the tree is up to date and you're just frobbing on, you know, inetd or something. You just want to spin in inetd without going and looking at the rest of the tree. You can tell make to, I know the rest of the tree is up to date, so skip it. And so, for example, in this case, we can do a build in external, run the ATF tests, which will go and find all the makefiles below that particular point, but it won't look at anything outside of that portion of the subtree. And meta subdir is the thing that does that. That's irrelevant. Building kernels is probably the BSD kernel build doesn't lend itself well to capturing dependencies because there is no source directory for the kernel build. So we actually wrote a little .mc file to avoid that. We can basically build create a source directory for a kernel build anywhere in the tree we like, and we split it up into separate directories for config, kernel, and modules, because typically the modules and the kernel both require config to have been run, so you put that in a separate directory so you can separate the two processes. It's probably the ugliest hack in the game, but it avoids having to completely rototill how kernels get built and still allow us to achieve what we want. Believe it or not, this is about all you need for the top-level makefile. Assuming you have a bunch of subdirectories which contain a bunch of makefile.depends, which you can even manually maintain, that list the initial directories that you care about to build, say your compiler package, you would mention, well, I need CC and I need AS and I need LD and so on. And you can accumulate these things and they can be recursive and so on. And ultimately, all the top-level makefile needs to know is, what target did you want me to build? Can I go find the dependency list for that and let dirdeps do the rest of the work? One of the goals of the conference was to actually, Juniper have contributed all of these makefiles that I mentioned, and I wanted to have them all available for you to download as soon as you get home. So I also wanted to make sure that they would actually work for somebody other than Juniper. So we went through the exercise of let's try and build FreeBSD current in meta mode to test that these things work for something other than Junos. And obviously I haven't completed the project in the few days that we undertook, but as you saw from that example at the start, it's pretty easy to make most of it work. The setup was pretty simple. I took the MUC files distribution that I was talking about, plonk that in a directory source merc in the top of the sandbox, and then make syspath is a variable you can tell so that bmake will go and search those directories in that order to find any make files that it's looking for. And then I just create a within this source merc directory, this guy, who really just includes the real sys.merc from FreeBSD. And that way we make sure we've got the normal environment that the FreeBSD build wants to see. And then we have these local.blahs to allow you to put your local customizations. For instance, because in this example we wanted to test the whole staging idea, then you want to make sure that everything depends on the stage directory. BMake and FreeBSD's make are a little bit different, but for the most part they're not significant. FreeBSD's make has a couple of modifiers that I think they picked up from OpenBSD's make several years ago. We couldn't actually find any usage of these modifiers within the FreeBSD tree other than there's a makefile that tests whether make is working, and it was using one of these. But the particular test case, the modifier being used was irrelevant, so it was like trivial to make it use one of the modifiers that didn't have a conflict. These things have different meanings in BMake. The other probably more significant difference is BMake is much more aggressive in terms of use of .path. And typically you want to tell it, if you've got things that you don't want it to go look for via .path, you tell it so. So for example, setting .nopath clean files is a simple clue to it saying, anything that I'm planning to generate in this thing, you shouldn't be going looking for. Similarly, all of the standard targets like depend, install, and so on and so forth, in NetBSD's build, they flag those all as phony to make sure that Make doesn't go off into the weeds looking for, can I find any sources to build depend? So a very small number of changes accommodate the differences. And while DirdEps requires probably most of the features of bMake, it's not a bad trade-off. I mentioned staging headers and libs is like doing make install as you go. Some fairly minor tweaks to BSD lib, inks, and similar make files just to make them use the metastage thing. This allows you to effectively do all your installing without having to be root and stuff like that. And also the metastage thing attempts to link the files rather than copy them if it can. And also it needs to put that little DirdEp thing beside them. But largely, I mentioned somebody was talking about there's hooks in my sys.merc to allow you to turn on debug flags at particular points during the build if you want to. That can prove useful, especially when, for example, the gathering of dependencies is not working the way you expected it to. You can actually set flags like this to make that meta to deps script run with like set minus x so that you can actually see absolutely everything that it was doing and work out why it's confused. Another good reason to keep it as a shell script. Sparse tree is something that we want to support. Our build has done this forever, and DirdEps works the same way. If it thinks it needs to build a directory and the directory isn't there, it doesn't get upset. It assumes that you know what you're doing and you've probably got a backing sandbox or something like that. You're going to solve the problem some other way. Our SDK that we provide to third-party vendors and so on leverages this sort of functionality. We provide them a backing sandbox that provides all the build tools, tool chains, and all the libraries and headers that they use, and they produce a sparse tree of just what they want to build. They can use all the same build magic and so on, and it, quote, just works. So in conclusion, and I haven't finished almost on time. MetaMode really just encapsulates all the things that we've decided over the last decade work well and allow us to continue to do it, but to do it more easily, more efficiently, and in a more generic manner. And we're pretty confident that others could benefit from some of the same things. And there's the URLs for the Cinco de Mayo release of bMake and the MIC files that go with it. Any questions? Anybody else got a question? No, sorry. Yep.
So for the compatibility,
yep.
Is it small enough and insignificant enough that is something we can just add to FreeBSD and say, okay?
I would say so. I mean, John has got just the stock FreeBSD build running with bMake, and so far it sounds like the patches are very minor. The next step is just to guarantee that you can then put those changes in and still build with FreeBSD's Make to make sure that it's a harmless set of changes. But in my little exercise, it's like 10-20 lines in, say, BSD sys.merc to make most of those differences just go away. So, yeah, I would imagine it's very harmless. Yes? How do you mean? Oh, yes, sorry.
So the changes
that you together to FileMon was originally written for FreeBSD. So I've done it again for NetBSD, and we'd be happy to see people do it for other OSs. It's trivial. You need to have the FileMon thing if you want to capture all those syscall stuff. And if you don't have it, you can still use MetaMode. For instance, on our daily builds where we don't expect them to do it more than once, capturing all that syscall data isn't particularly useful, so we don't run the FileMon module on those. But we still want to be able to run the build in MetaMode because we can still capture all the error output and stuff like that from things when they blow up, and be able to do the useful analysis of how the build exploded. Does that answer your question?
Kind of. Like, it's
Yes, yes. But the differences that we, the changes we made to FreeBSD's make, sorry, not make, but to the make files, were simply to make it such that bmake can swallow them versus FreeBSD's make. And it turns out to be something not particularly useful, so it's not likely something that we would want to add to NetBSD's make.
So a little bit of tweaks and, you know, a few things like that. And then, as you said, some of the .node path can be a little less aggressive. And if you're building install headers, don't go look for install header.c or anything, which are also purely
Does that help?
Is file not available?
Yeah, it's in FreeBSD, and it's currently in a branch in FreeBSD, but David's planning to get it into head. It's in head in NetBSD, as is all the metafile stuff for make itself. I have a dtrace script that works fine on Darwin and Solaris, but given if it weren't for the fact that the exec probes don't necessarily give you the full path of what you exec, that would be a great avenue for providing support on a broader range of platforms. But given the way dtrace works, it's more effective to port the kernel module. It would, and in fact, well, yes, it would. The problem with ktrace is it shows you all the system calls that failed as well as the ones that worked. And what we really care about is the ones that worked, because they represent the files that you really read, and therefore they're the ones that matter. Whereas if you try and analyze the ktrace stuff, and I know people have done this, it's a lot more work to work out that, okay, I see a name I on this thing, and did the open failed? Okay, forget it. You know, So yes, you can get the info, but it's a lot more complex.
And I think it also impacts runtime.
If
ktrace
does too much, we're only interested in the
world's
small subset.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you could, I wouldn't say relatively easy. There's a bit of dance that make goes through to, for instance, you know, when it's building a target and knows it's in meta mode, he's got to open, you know, the FileMon device and for each child that he kicks off, he needs to associate its PID with that device so that we capture all of the syscalls and so on. If you were going to, for instance, retain support for doing this via dtrace, you'd have to, you know, provide an implementation of those various hooks to run dtrace instead and so on. You could do all this stuff via different mechanisms, but you wouldn't want to go crazy with adding too many.
PWD as the current directory, which if that is or is having a symlink in there, different from what, for example, the kernel can see. So what is being reported may be different from what make things.
Unless somebody changed something. I basically made NetBSD's make ignore PWD a long time ago, for these very reasons. BMake only pays attention to the output of getCWD, because that's the only thing you can rely on.
Okay. It was the same as FreeBSD, but I put that in 10 years later for a second.
Well, I got one of the later, I think it may not have been the Cinco de Mayo version, but around that time. And I do see that the default user auch included, didn't include the absolute path name.
Oh, if you're talking about what you end up seeing in the meta files,
yeah.
They will record whatever the path given to the kernel was.
Right.
So that won't always be the correct absolute path. But the meta to depths thing, as he's going through these things, allows for that by making sure he converts it to an absolute path before he sends it up the tree.
Okay. So any links or so doesn't confuse the dependency.
Yeah. You can't necessarily rely on the paths that you see in the FarmOne output as being, you know, absolute paths.
Right.
And invariably they're not. Yes? I haven't measured it. On any machine that you would probably contemplate building, you know, 190,000 files as fast as you can, it probably doesn't matter. But it's not terribly significant, I don't think. I mean, we've been basically doing the same thing in a more laborious manner for 10 years. Yep.
Is that the main?
It probably is.
It's not a huge change compared to.
No. So the only difference between this version of BMake and the last one, which I think David put into ports, is the bailiwick thing. Which, unless you have a specific, if you know you're doing this staging stuff, is probably the only reason you'd want that particular knob. So there's no real functional change in Make with regard to meta mode for quite some time.
Another question. So as a developer, when I say prop on cat and I do it on the machine I want to eventually install it on,
yep.
I do find it easy to have my objects in the source directory because I can run cat by saying ./ and there. I don't have to figure out where my object is.
You can, yeah, so that's an example where you might want to use the make obj link.
Okay.
So you end up with, you know, ./ obj cat that you can run easily. That all still works fine, just the build will ignore that obj link,
right.
Because it's, if you've got, well, assuming you've got make obj dir or obj dir prefix set, they take precedence, so it's handy to know the precedence of those things. So, yeah, it's, the idea is, pretty much anything that you would normally do should still just work.
Yeah. Does that work recursively? As in, I start with being cat, and I actually also need to make livec, but I also do want to have the livec objects in the source tree.
I'm not going to let you put it in the source tree. That's just evil.
It is, but I'm a developer, so.
Well, yeah.
I think I'm supposed to be. No, I mean, I can see that from a build infrastructure in, say,
so that, yeah, the reason that you don't want to do what you're talking about is, oh, sorry, the reason you don't want to do what you're talking about if you wanted to also be able to capture dependencies is, if I wake this up, it helps enormously in trying to do this sort of stuff if you can unambiguously distinguish between what was a generated file and what was a source file.
Okay.
And if they're in the same directory, suddenly you need to have a lot more information to be able to make that determination. So ensuring that they're in different directories is a trivial way to achieve it.
Yes.
Yes?
Are you able to talk about the build hardware that you use to build GenOps?
Sure. I hope you don't want precise models, because I don't, but he probably knows more about it than I do. Yeah, but he was answering. Is that what I've got?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good.
And the megahertz is right around 3.0, I think.
Yeah, when we buy new build servers, we don't go and replace hundreds of build servers, but so that each batch of new machines is going to be like that. That Sisyphus cluster was originally one machine; it's now over 30 machines, and they're obviously of different performance because they've got, you know, different numbers of CPUs and we eventually get to a point where we say, okay, let's just get rid of all the four-core boxes because they're just too slow to be using. But there is variation in the build servers.
And this is one of the reasons we help sponsor self-dubbed externally, because this thing's got 3 2-terabyte file systems the developer would build. David Wolfskill tried to FSCK was one of them. It took 13 hours and 2.5 gigabyte workload.
A build that produces 100 plus gigabytes of stuff is not nice. So we're going to try and fix that, but that's somewhat orthogonal to this.
So, this sounds really great, and everything, but it's probably not going to be adopted by FreeBSD, right away. That's the main build system. But other companies, you're hoping other companies, other people working with it, will start working with it, and you guys will be kind of like the lead or the maintainers?
So I've maintained the BMake distribution for about 20 years, so...
another decade is...
what's another decade? Look, we hope that other people will have a play with this, because we hope that they'll find that it's actually very useful. Our selfish objective in all of this is to be able to use this ourselves with minimal impact on the FreeBSD that we, want to be able to track more closely. And so whether or not FreeBSD ever use MetaMode as their build, provided that we can, do it internally and not be having to maintain huge sets of changes is desirable. But hoping that we've demonstrated that there's actually a good reason to consider using it, because... not everybody apparently enjoys doing, build world and build release and all those sort of things. And we know our developers would riot if we tried to suggest that they do that.
I guess you just have to try it a few times and compare it with the...
Yeah, and that was the other thing that I wanted to do with the, the building of FreeBSD Current, was do it in such a way that you can try it and play with it, see whether you like it, and if you don't, well, no harm done. And to some extent, we've been doing that in the Junos build for like over a year. Those makefile.depends, I think I was building the tree in MetaMode for close to a year before any of those were committed to the repository. Exactly. All of these little bits and pieces really start to pay off when you start doing combinations. Individually, it's interesting that you can capture dependencies from, every command you run, but the payoff is when you start using that in conjunction with some of these other things. Any other questions? Say that again.
So in the example, you basically took the mug that comes with BMake, and
yes,
with a local FreeBSD mug, you said, okay, take the FreeBSD system mug to...
Yeah, so these guys are all in the generic mug distribution, I don't know, about a year or two ago, I decided that the way I was dealing with sysmucks for different platforms sucked. So what the distribution has now is a sys.merc, which is so generic that you can always use it everywhere. So it's a convenient place to put all the cool macros that I want to make sure exist. And then the first thing it does is go and see if it can find a platform-specific sys.merc to include and learn how to do, shared libraries on Darwin and stuff like that. And because FreeBSD, normally you can just get away with the generic stuff that it provides, so the distribution doesn't include a FreeBSD.merc. But in this scenario, I wanted to make sure that I was using as much of FreeBSD Current as I could, so I just plonked this little guy there that does nothing more than include that to make sure that by the time we've read sys.merc, we've effectively used FreeBSD's sys.merc.
Right.
and added the little special sauce that we wanted.
I don't know if you have the insight, but how much work or how difficult will it be to either integrate the FreeBSD things we really need into the generic one, the mug that comes with vMake, or depend more on the generic mug so that you can unify the two and...
I'm almost inclined not to even attempt that. Based on the bug reports that I occasionally get, this stuff is used on some really bizarre systems. So I guess it works. My use case for it over the last several years has been mostly just to be able to build vMake itself. It's almost a losing game trying to maintain a generic set of .mc files that are going to work on a plethora of systems.
Yeah.
So I'm rather inclined to try and keep them as simple and generic as possible.
But isn't that why you have the FreeBSD component?
Yeah.
These
are the ones I listed because these are the only ones that are actually being used.
Yeah.
All of these things like obj.mc, I'm linking to BSD obj.mc because I want to have the automatic obj.dir creation, but all of the prog and lib and things that live in there aren't being used, and so because vMake can, you know, with the minor changes that we mentioned, quite happily use FreeBSD's makefiles as is, there's no reason to try and maintain anything else. Yeah, so in the Junos build, the share.mc or build.mc files that we've used, you know, we haven't made any attempt to track FreeBSD's make files because our build works completely differently. But if the goal is to, you know, bring this stuff to FreeBSD, then these are the only bits that you need to care about. The rest of it, quote, just works. So
whatever you have can just as well be used on FreeBSD.
So if you consider that the overriding goal of the BSD build is that the makefile in bincat that you care about is as simple as possible, and hence my three rules of how to write a makefile, if you actually adhere to that, what's in the, you know, share.mc and so on is irrelevant so long as it works.
Yes.
And so if you're doing building on Darwin, for example, the fact that you're using a different set of .mc files doesn't matter as long as bincat builds and works.
True.
And so it depends, when you say you're wanting to do development for FreeBSD, it depends on whether you're wanting to actually do development on bincat and have it work, or whether you're actually trying to develop FreeBSD's build, which is a very different proposition. So if you're going to actually work on the build versus a particular program, you really need to use the correct environment,
right,
and that wouldn't be OS X.
Well, I think it applies still if you want to do bincat. The way I see this, the use of share mug is really generic. It isn't really, I hope by intent, originally tied to user source. We use it heavily in user source, but I think we still claim that this is something you can use for your own.
That's probably, I can't speak for FreeBSD, but certainly with NetBSD when I first was doing vMake, the share mc in NetBSD was very tightly coupled to user source and user obj and so on, and there was initially, you know, resistance to making it any more generic, which is why I originally did the mc distribution.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, things have changed dramatically. You can now build almost anything. He liked using the share MIC stuff. And so, to my mind, the generic MIC distribution